Eveen and Company with Eveen Ihuliwai on RTE Radio 1.
Good morning. My guests on this week's programme are both from Cork. Rob Heffernan is a world champion athlete, one of only three Irish athletes to achieve that accolade. All of his years of training, sacrifice and commitment paid off this year as he walked across the finishing line in Moscow on the 14th of August, winning the 50-kilometre walking race. Marion Heffernan is his wife. She is also an athlete and has sprinted for Ireland at European, world and Olympic level. She's put her own career on the back burner now as she is manager to Rob, and they are both looking forward to a new baby due in early 2014, a brother or sister for Cathal and Megan. As an elite sportsman, everything revolves around Rob's training schedule. And so finding a time to record this interview hasn't been easy, but I am delighted to welcome you both to studio in Cork. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Eveen.
Thanks, Eveen.
Rob, you were in pre-training in October and you've started back in earnest now training again. What is the focus of your schedule at the moment?
You know, to be honest, I had a good break in October, but now my total focus is back on training, and I'm delighted to be back. I'm back training twice a day, and I'm back sleeping during the day and training in the evening, and you know, I'm happy to be doing it, even though I'll probably be giving out about it in another couple of months, but it's great, you know.
And is it hard to get back to that, Rob, because you know, you've kind of had 2.5 months to relish the victory in Moscow, but now you're looking forward to the next big race, which is going to be in Zurich. Like, is it hard to get back into that schedule?
Because I had so many kind of, you know, times when I was younger, when I've got injured and stuff, and you know, they could have been career-threatening injuries. I know at this age, and the fact that I'm healthy and I'm motivated, and you know, I'm at the top, I know I'm in a very, very privileged position, and I love what I'm doing, and I know I'm not going to be able to do it forever. So, you know, I'm going to maximise the time I have now being at this level.
See, you sound like it's almost a relief to get back to doing what you're doing. Marion, did you find it the same?
You know, you come to a point, you know, where we kind of went, you know, yeah, we're ready to get back. You know, you're kind of, you're out of your comfort zone, and you know, you can't live like that life forever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Rob, have you always been this disciplined?
No. I think I was very disciplined. It's just, I don't think, you know, I fully understood the whole structure of a whole year when I was younger. So I'd enjoy the crack and stuff. Like, so I'd probably look for windows and I'd want to burn the candle at both ends when I was younger. But I think discipline is, it's a strong word. I think if you understand what you're doing, you it's up to you to make the right choice then, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what about now when the baby comes, Rob? Like, will training still take precedence over family there, or will you allow yourself some paternity leave?
It's tough, like, because me and Marion, like, the closer it's getting now, the more we're speaking about it. And, you know, the harsh reality is that I'm world champion and I want to try and win the European Championships next year. And Marion understands that, and If I have to stay up during the night, and if I had to do night feeds, I wouldn't be able to train.
Mm-hmm.
But then in between training sessions, you know, obviously I'll spend all of my time with Marion and the baby. Like.
And what about you, Marion? Is there maternity leave for managers, or how will you make sure that Rob is still doing his thing while you're minding the child?
We'll have to take January how it comes, and then hopefully by February we're in sync.
All in your stride. No pun intended.
No.
Rob, you said there a second ago, you know, I'm world champion and I'm working towards the European Championships. Is that different now for your training? You know, because before you were always just missing out on the medals, but now you're going back in as a champion. Does that change your psychology going into the training?
It probably gives me a lot more confidence, and it's after giving me a lot more confidence in stuff that I've done in the past. And, you know, I think for the last 10 years, I've always thought in my head that I was the best, even though I didn't win medals and stuff.
At least you're honest.
Yeah, and, you know, people would say, oh, you're up there now. And the only difference is that I have a medal now. But if you look back over my last 6 years, I've always been there or thereabouts. And yeah, Obviously I won this year. And
tell me, is it different now because, you know, you're a national figure now in a way that you mightn't have been before. Tell me about the kind of positive reactions that you've been getting from people since Moscow.
I still can't believe the impact that it has had on the public. And, you know, even when I know I'm back training full time now, and, you know, the amount of people who support me on the road in Cork, and it's like as if it happened again yesterday, and I'll have to start changing my training loops, you know, but in a positive way, just so that I can stay concentrated. But, you know, it's still very hard for me to grasp. Like, I don't sit at home every night thinking that I'm famous or that I have a big profile. I still feel very ordinary in myself. I suppose I was nearly a bit uncomfortable with it, like, to a point, because, you know, I had to pull the medal out everywhere and pulling it out for gigs, and you're kind of a bit embarrassed about it, like, and it's something that you kind of don't prepare for, like, you know.
And what's been the most positive comment that someone has made to you since?
There's loads. Like it's like I just had a phone call there this morning from Brother Dooley, and you know he knows me since I'm young, and he just, you know, commended just, you know, the lift that myself and Mar gave the country. And like he said, you know, since he knows me since, and he says you haven't changed, and he said, and that's a great trait. He said you've mm-hmm. always stayed true to yourself, and you know, and everywhere I go, people have been very, very, very positive towards me. Like, it's and it's something that motivates me to move on as well, because I saw the lift that everybody has got, and not just me, even my dad thinks he's famous now walking around Ballyfihan, like.
And that must make a nice difference actually, Rob, that, you know, you're still living at home, you're with your community in Cork that you grew up training in, and you're seeing the same people all the time.
Yeah. And Cork people, you know, I'm from Cork, and Cork are very, very supportive of their successful sports people. But, you know, if you ended up winning the World Championships or anything, and the next thing, you have a new voice, or you know, you're trying to pretend you're someone else, you'd be cut down quick enough, like, you know. So I think people appreciate to see me training at home, to see me training in Ireland, you know, and I think it'll give other people a belief that they can do it now as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Rob, you've also found yourself though in the middle of a controversy as well, and partly to do with that way that you're a national focus now. Tell me about the tweet that you sent.
Ah, you know, looking back, it's the biggest mistake that I've made, you know, since Moscow. Like, I remember just sitting down on a Tuesday night at home, and, you know, I was very, very busy. I was just back from Dublin, and I had a load of stuff on. And then, you know, obviously, the case of the child presumably being kidnapped was all over the papers. And I just responded to a Twitter feed on Twitter and said, you know, it was disgraceful, and, you know, ship him out. And it was just me being ordinary at home, you know, thinking of Madeleine McCann. And then the knee-jerk reaction to it then is that I was being called racist and that it was disgraceful. And
were you surprised by that reaction?
Yeah, I was very hurt, like, because, you know, like, I've trained all over the world, and I have really good friends all over the world in all different communities. And I, you know, when you bring it back, I reacted to thinking a child was kidnapped, and it was stupid, because I never read all the facts, and I threw it out, and I apologised, and still people are bringing it up to me. And it is, I was, you know, I didn't sleep over it, and I was just surprised that people were ready to tear me down, like, and, you know, have pops off me, and, you know, and I apologise, and I was very, very sorry for it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Marion, what impact did that have on Rob, that reaction?
Being married to him and living with him and knowing him, like, he's, you know, he's very much not a racist. Oh, like, you know, reading some of the stuff that people were saying, like, it just felt unfair, you know, that, like, this kind of title was put over him, and it was so far from what he actually was and his character. It's like, oh my God, like, people have got it so wrong. And you know the tweet was stupid of him, obviously.
Rob, you've said it's knee jerk and it was a harsh reaction and everything like that, but what have you learned from it?
I think the biggest lesson for me out of it is that, going back to, you know, the reaction that the public had to me, and I still feel like I'm just an ordinary fella from Cork, and this really drove it home to me. It's like, no, you need to be more responsible. Mm-hmm. You are a public figure now, and you can't just be throwing out comments like this. And, you know, I have to think of the bigger picture and the impact that it can have. Mm-hmm. And it's after giving me a big realisation, you know, in a negative way, of where I am now, and that I have, you know, that responsibility,
yeah,
being a public figure. And, you know, I apologise, and I know, I'm a human, you know, people make mistakes, mm-hmm. but people need to get over it as well and move on, like, you know.
That responsibility then, is that distracting when you're going back into your training?
No, I apologise, and I've explained myself. And if anything, it's after making me more focused, because, you know, everything was so good, and, you know, there was probably a point there I thought I could walk on water. Everything was so positive, like, and I think, no, it gave me a big reality of the world. And when I go back training, it's like, going, no, I'm very, very focused now going back, and I'm very driven, and I know what I'm about. I've apologised, and it'll make me focus more on what I'm good at, like, and, you know, and I won't be commenting on any other things moving forward.
Is that hard though? Because, I mean, you're a professional athlete, Marion, you're a professional athlete as well. And now you have to deal with the highs and lows of, you know, for want of a better word, celebrity.
Especially after last week, you would nearly want to sidestep the whole celebrity thing. And, you know, we spoke about it ourselves and what it was like, you know, Rob, at the end of the day, you're a sportsman, you know. If you want to comment on current affairs or anything like that, you know, go into journalism or do something. But, like, you're a sportsman, you comment on sports.
Well, you're looking forward to the European Championships now, which is Zurich, and that's next summer. And Marion, you're Rob's manager. Mm-hmm. And you're a team in training for this, but who is really the boss in this?
Oh, that's a hard one. I take orders very, very well. But no, I think Rob's structure and what he's put in place for himself for the last 4 years, you know, I'm coming, like, obviously I've witnessed it and I know what works for Rob. Like, and even up to last year, you know, Rob's year last year was brilliant, you know, but there was little areas of it that were flawed. And I was like, all right, you know, Rob doesn't work well when this happens, or Rob does work well when this happens. So I could kind of come in and say, all right, you know, even, you know, I kind of went working with you from November on, and it was only meant to be up until Christmas. And I was
I had nothing in place again, like, you know, so I had somebody working with me up to London, and after London, he was gone. And then, like, it was negotiations.
But it was nearly, I think it was easy. I said, look, I'll help Rob out and I'll train as well. And, like, I train by myself every single day. I do the same sessions, you know, nearly year in, year out. And I kind of got onto the track after running an Olympics, putting a lot of stuff on hold, and, like, you know, got my training for the week, and it was the same sessions. And I was like, oh, I can't do this again. I was like, I know it was freezing, the weather was horrible, and it's a massive, massive sacrifice. Mm-hmm.
So was it almost easier to make the decision when you weren't as motivated about the running yourself, but you knew that you could take over that role as manager for Rob?
It was. I know, like, London worked brilliant for Rob, and very, very little will change.
Marion is your manager now, and you won Philips Sports Manager of the Year in September, but she's the latest in a long line of people who've kind of brought you to where you are. Tell me a little bit about John Hayes.
John Hayes, I still call him Mr. Hayes, was my club coach when I was younger. And, you know, obviously I started running, and he saw that I had a talent, and he lived up the road from me, and he was the local coach in Toker AC. I didn't want to go running, or I didn't want to go walking. I wanted to play football like every other child. Like, so he was running the park where I used to play football, and he eventually enticed me down to Toker and the athletics club there. And he never put pressure on me to take up athletics, but, you know, he brought me to every race. He was bringing me to training sessions, and he was very, very good to me when I was younger, and he kind of never pushed me. He always held me back, and there was never, ever any pressure, like, because he was always conscious of the fellas who were pushed too hard when they were younger and they gave up. So my training was kind of more fun. And, like, one funny story, like, I remember he gave me a Toker singlet for the cross country, because I didn't have my own top. And I brought the singlet home anyway, and it was the club singlet. It was there since the 1960s, and my mum washed it and the singlet went pink.
Oh no.
And I avoided him for months because I was just so embarrassed about it, like. And I didn't know what to tell him, you know. I was only 13. He was after wrecking, like, a club sacred piece of cloth. And
he forgave you anyways.
He did, like, but I was still very embarrassed about it. Like, it took me over 10 years to get it off my chest and tell people. But, you know, looking back now, it was only a small thing, but it could have been, you know, it was fine line getting into the sport. But, yeah, he was very good to me underage, like, and without him, I probably wouldn't have been in the sport.
We're going to talk about Moscow, you know, in detail later on, but you rang him first after that race in Moscow, so he obviously, you know, meant a lot to you.
Yeah, like, even him and his wife did nearly be like a second, set of parents to me. Like, you know, they've watched me growing up and they've watched me develop, and I say I've a very, very good relationship with him still. And even if I didn't talk to him in 6 months of the year, I'd come back and I could have a chat, and he knows me, and there's that bond is there, like. And I rang him, and small things like that, when somebody's been that good to you growing up, even though he would have nothing to do with my athletics now or my training, I knew he'd appreciate the call. And he was old school, he was tough, like, you know, like, you could do well when you were younger, and he didn't give you much praise, like, you know. It was like, this is normal, get on with it. And when I rang him after Moscow, I think it was the first time he was genuinely, you know, he was delighted, like. And I told him, I says, you're the first person I know after ringing. And sure, he was thrilled, and he was there the night then when we came home. So, you know, it's nice to repay people like that then when you do really well and just acknowledge them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Marion, you moved to the Toher Club at age 17. Did you know John as well, John Hayes?
I actually met Mr. Hayes in a pound shop, and that's how I ended up joining the club. I was kind of in limbo between clubs, and he was like, look, there was no senior structure in the club I was in, and it was like, look, you can come down and train with us anytime, or even come down for a few weeks and test the waters and see how you get on. And I went down with another friend of mine, and I'm there since.
Tell me about your first piece of music. It was played at your wedding. Why is that song important?
I wasn't a Take That fan, but I do like their older music. Like, it was just a song that kind of stuck, and even now I haven't got sick of it.
I've more narcissistic feelings about it. Like, it was Rule the World, and that was it. That for me.
I was thinking that, Rob. Well. So, you know, because it's you and me, we can, you know, it's real. Yeah. It's really about the team, and you're
it
very
was, yeah. Because yeah. We, you know, like, we'd be slagging each other, like, when we were going out with each other first. Like, she was like, going, if you didn't meet me, you'd still be renting a room in that house in Carrigline.
And,
I was
and
like,
how did you meet you'd
be living with your mum, you know, I made you. And she's like, I made you. And I was like, going, what? We knew each other for years, and I was injured, both of us were injured that year, I think. And I always, like, I fancied Marion, like, you know, didn't have any ambitions of getting married or anything. Like, she's a sprinter, like, and I thought she was, you know, she motivated me to go to the track training, and the nights I wasn't meant to be there, like, but I got her. I was getting treated for
osteitis pubis,
which I didn't
what
have.
Is that?
It's I had two hernias in 2006, so I was out in the clubhouse in Toker, and I was getting treated for an injury that wasn't the problem actually at the time, but Marion had an ankle injury, and I knew she was injured. And it was like, you know, my physio's out here, you know, if you come out, I can get him to have a look at your ankle as well, like. And Marion came out to the clubhouse, and the physio was leaving.
So I passed the physio on the route, and I just goes, oh no, I'm after being hustled.
But I didn't think she was going to come out, like, it was like, you know. And
chance in your arm. Yeah.
Chance in my arm. But then when it happened, it was like, oh yeah, I thought it was cool. And then when she came out, I was like, oh no, what am I meant to do now, like.
So what did you do? She'd arrived in for the physio.
I went in anyway, and like, Rob decided to kind of give his own kind of physio approach, and like started giving me stability exercises on a medicine ball, and I was like, oh my god, like. But we ended up going for coffee then, and I think,
and then she fell in love with me.
Then completely.
Well, let's listen to this song that was played at your wedding. Rob, was that song played at the Olympics as well?
Like, we were at the closing ceremony at the Olympics, and it was brilliant, but Marion was piggybacking me around because I raced a 50k the day before, and I couldn't walk, I was wrecked. And we wanted to get out. You know, it was, closing ceremony was brilliant, but we wanted to get out of there and just meet up with our friends, because you'd see no one in months. So we went out, we left the stadium, and we got out to the barrier to leave. And the barrier was closed. Nobody was left to leave. So we were stuck at the barrier like cattle. And Paddy Barnes was next to us on our right. Yeah. And he had the
boxer,
same idea.
Yeah.
And then Take That came on in the stadium, and that song was played, and we missed it, like.
Yeah,
and we couldn't get back. And we were going, oh my God, like, you know. So it was a disaster.
And they weren't meant to be, because Gary Barlow wasn't...
he wasn't meant to play.
Yeah, so that's why we kind of hightailed it out of there. And then the finale was Take That.
So we listened to it outside the stadium, stuck in a crowd waiting to get out of there.
And Rob, you came fourth in the London Olympics, which for some people they think, well, I'd be devastated after that, I wouldn't be able to go on. But that in fact spurred you on to go for the gold and to win gold in the Moscow World Championships. And we've a clip now of what radio listeners or RT would have heard on the day of this race.
With 2 metres to go, Rob Heffernan is the champion of the world! Rob Heffernan is the champion of the world in 3 hours, 37-56, the little man from Cork has won the World Championship here in Moscow. Just as I see Rob's wife, Marion, who's been coaching him, race onto the track and embrace him. Two Ireland flags wrapped around this golden couple of Irish athletics. It's a fantastic...
I've nearly got goosebumps listening to you crossing the line and wearing the tricolour. But where were you, Marion, while Rob was walking the race?
I was on the drinks table. There's a drinks table on the 2K circuit, and I think I was about a kilometre and a half from the stadium. So just after 48 kilometres, I gave Rob his last drink, and then I nearly ran up with him. Literally, when he came in one end of the stadium, I came in the other. So I saw the whole lap of honour, and oh, it was fantastic.
When you're at the drink station, like, are you allowed to talk to each other? Can you shout?
No, because you're with each other for the whole year. It's nearly down to one word cues, you know, and he'd understand.
But at that stage, the work is done. Everything should be perfect. So it's just delivering a performance. So it's to stay calm. You know, you go through it all year long. I know this is it. You know, it's too late to change anything.
And how do you stay calm? Because there must be so much focus, so much things that you have to think about for 50 kilometres. And, you know,
just experience, in that I gathered my experience from my whole life in other races. And, you know, it's not like I just arrived in the line in Moscow and that I've never done any of this before. Mm-hmm. You know, like, as I said, I've had some very big results and I've missed out medals that have been perceived as being disastrous, but it could turn out in the next couple of years that I could have a few more medals if the fellas in front of me are done for drugs. You know, I know what was perceived as a disaster will be a success. So it's all about medals. But no, you use your experience from all the competitions in the past. I used my experience from London, used my experience from Barcelona, and I knew I was prepared better. Mm-hmm. And every day then in training, you know, like, I train always with the competition in mind. So, you know, you're not going on kind of like, oh, I hope this goes well today. It's like, you know, it's clinical. Like.
Well, since it's broken up into 2 kilometre circuits, like, do you break that yourself then into 10K chunks, 20K chunks, where you're saying something to yourself?
Yeah. First, I work on my split. I look at my splits every 5K. So I take a split. I'd look at my watch.
What's
every
split? 5K.
It's my time. And then, so you have something to look at a 5K. Mm-hmm. And then every kilometre, I had a kind of strategy. It was like going, your legs are very strong. The next game, my hips were very strong. The third game, my arms are very strong. You're great. You're very strong. The fourth game was...
Are you saying this to yourself as you're running?
No, your
as
head
you're walking,
is good.
Sorry.
Your head is good. Everything was kind of positive. And then the fifth game was like, everyone is supporting me and everyone's willing me to do well. And I thought of that. And then it was back. Legs, hips, arms, head. No motivation. Okay. Split. So there was all little goals all the way along the way to focus on.
Did it matter that there weren't as many people supporting you there in Moscow?
London was unbelievable. It was, you know, it was great. And I loved that. Like, you know, I love that platform. I love the attention. And it probably got me in trouble in school all the way up. Like, you know,
is he like that all the time?
Crack, like, you know, and I love it. Like, and if you can, and as I got older, I realised that's the way I am. Direct it right and feed off it, like, you know. And then I went down to the 20K in Russia and I watched the 20K and I was like, there's no one here. And I was expecting 40 or 50,000 Russians to be egging the Russians on. And I can remember just watching the race, and there was fellas with me and a couple of lads from Athletics Ireland were over that day, and there was a couple of athletes and they were all chatting, and I was very quiet just watching everything going, there's going to be no support. I can't rely on that adrenaline the next day. And I have to prepare my head for, you know, this is you, but you need to deliver something here. And as it turned out, the Irish that were out there, that nearly made it more intimate, because you could spot them on the course and they were genuinely massive athletic supporters. So I fed off it then again, but on a much smaller scale, you know.
Well, you were racing in Russia, and the Russians are kind of... The leaders normally in this race. What was it like then, knowing that you had to kind of knock them out as you were going along in the last 10K?
I was ready for it. I loved that all the way up. Like, you know, I love scalping people all through my career, and whether I got beaten, I'd want to come out the next year and try and beat them. And if I got beaten again, I'd look at other things and I'd come out the next year and beat them. And then you'd beat one fella, and then it was up to another level. I was like, I want to take this fella down now, or this group down. And then in London, sure, I was fourth in London, so the natural progression, if I had a better year, I was going out to Russia. I knew the Russians don't go out for fourth or fifth, they go out to win. And I was going to hunt them down, and then after 40k I was like going, alright, we'll go to war here now. I've had other results that have been massive successes, but people only recognise medals. Mm-hmm. And you know, and to win obviously was amazing, like, you know. But
well, you won and you flew the flag proudly for us, and somehow, Marion, you got down and you were able to see Rob and hug him. What did you say to him?
I genuinely don't know. I think there was words coming out, right? But I don't know, was there any order to him? But when he came through the line, it was like he did it. And I was like, did he? You know, and like you're looking on, it's like you're kind of, you're looking at him and you're saying, no, there's something, something's, you know, they're going to be told they have another lap or there's something else. Like, it's very, very hard to digest. You know, you can nearly feel it isn't happening, you know. And even we came out of the stadium when we came back on the bus and we got into the hotel and we sat in the bed and we were like, what the hell just happened there? You know, and it was only until people were knocking at the door saying, oh, you know, RT or Auntie or News Talk or Auntie, or and it's like, Jesus, it happened. You know, it's like, it took us, we were battling an awful lot with it, you know, because it's...
Yeah, it could be gone. It's just, yeah. You know, it's not real. Like, you know, maybe it's a dream or...
Yeah, because I think, like, even the lead up to it, like, we were in nearly seclusion. You know, his altitude camp was... He was at altitude for nearly 5 weeks over the summer. Yeah. And you go from there to a holding camp, which is, again, you know, it's just...
It was where the Sound of Music was in Salzburg in Austria. It was just, you know, it was isolated, but it was beautiful. But we, you know, it was just very calm. No social contact, but lovely, you know.
And then the build up to the race, you're kind of, you know, you're still trying to keep level. And then it was like the race finished and was like, are we allowed to go mad? Can we go mad? You know, because it was so, it was completely...
You're institutionalised.
And you have to be told how to act after it. Like, but I think as soon as we got back, even into Dublin, we were looking at the people's response and it was like, that's what we're feeling. You know, that's what we want to tap into, but we just couldn't. And then back to Cork was magnified by about 10.
Yeah, it was unreal.
And it was, you know, we nearly felt when we came into Cork that we hijacked somebody else's homecoming because there was so many people turned out. And oh, it was just, it's surreal, you know.
Marion, I have to ask, how did you get from the stadium, though, down to see Rob? I mean, that's not normal, is it? That's like running Crow Park now.
We have our wild card called Patsy McGonagall. He can wink and nod in about 17 different
head
languages.
Down and just move on.
But it was really strict, you know. So I genuinely don't know how he did it. He was like just ushered me in and like pointed on the track, and
it was a massive security breach.
It was,
like.
Yeah, because even after I came off the track, there was security people coming around taking my name on my accreditation and stuff.
Yeah,
I was like,
I was any more surprised at winning or that you were on the track.
I know. And even because I remember running onto the track when I'm going to be taken down, somebody's going to run over and just, you know, get me to the ground or something like that. Like,
and Rob, what did you say to her when you saw her?
I think we just both knew, you know, because
we had no words.
Yeah, it was we both knew we couldn't say anything. Like,
no,
it was the only thing that we didn't prepare for. Like, you know, afterwards, even going through the line, even with the flag, or it was just,
what would I do if I won? You know, it's
we never talked about what you were meant to do afterwards, and it was.
Yeah, because even Rob was looking up, like, after, like, there was hundreds of photographs after being taken. He did his lap of honour and then he kind of looked up at the Irish crew in the corner of the stadium and go, what do I do now?
Those are great memories of Moscow this year. But our second piece of music brings us much closer to home. Rob, tell me about this piece of music. It's from Luke Kelly.
When I listen to his songs in my childhood, it was, you know, the smell of a fry on a Sunday morning at home and, you know, the oldies and Irish being on and, you know, all the old Irish songs and, you know, Song for Ireland's and always a song that stood out with me. You know, and I love Luke Kelly. So, yeah, looking back at my childhood, my dad was a big, you know, traditional music follower and that would stand out in my head.
I stood by your Atlantic sea and I sang a song for Ireland.
That was Luke Kelly with Song for Ireland, the song choice of Rob Heffernan and his wife Marion, my guest this morning. Now, Rob, the World Championships in 2013 were full of joy and celebration, but the World Championships in 2011 were very different. You had to come home from South Korea after some dreadful news about your mum.
Yeah, we were out it was my last hard session on the track, and I can remember, you know, just the relief, like, and we were just, I always remember leaving the track. It went well because I had a couple of injuries that year. So relaxed, so happy. And myself, Marion, Luke Adams, an Australian, and we went off to a coffee shop in Daegu, and went to, and Yvonne Casson, who was helping coach me, and it was great. It was, we came back and we were in great form, and left the coffee shop and came back, and Patsy McGonigal came up to me and he said, look, he said, I have some news for you, and he told me, like, and I couldn't believe it. Like, I said, no. He says, no, it's my grandmother, like. And he says, no, and he says, no, it has to be my grandmother, like, it's not my mum. And obviously, and then I had to ring home, and geez, it was, and then the next, it was just, it was horrible, like, you know, we had to leave, left the village, me and Mara left the village nearly instantly. We were gone, and on a train over to the airport and flying back. And I think, like, I think I cried non-stop all the way back to Ireland and for the following few days, and it was horrible, like. And then a part of me was like, oh, I go home and I'll come back again.
Because it was very sudden, it wasn't expected.
Yeah, it was sudden. It ended up my mother had a heart attack, but it was like at the time it was an accident. She fell down the stairs and she was found at the end of the stairs, and got home, and it's still very raw to me, like. And you know, just came back, and Marion came home with me, and it was very tough for everyone, because you know you want to be around anybody who's lost somebody. It's instinct. You just want to be around your family at that time. And me and my brothers and sisters, we stayed up in our mum's house that time, and we just wanted to be close together. And Marion had to carry on, you know, with normal life with the kids and stuff, and look after Cahill. And I didn't want to be near none of the kids or anything, like, you know. And I wanted to be near no one. Like, I didn't want to talk. Didn't want to talk to Mar. Didn't want to talk to anybody. It was just, you know, it was just inconsolable. I was just completely numb, like.
Were you the youngest, Rob, of the family?
No, I have an older sister, Rhonda, and then I have a brother, Elton, and I have another two sisters, Auntie and Lindsay. And, you know, and you'd have moments of normality throughout it. And Mara had to qualify for the Olympics, and it was their last chance, really, to qualify. And Mara came home with me, and I was like, no, Mara, you need to go back out, like. This is, all her life has been on hold for this. And basically, like, you know, Marion went to the graveyard. She organised for herself to get back out.
Because you were part of a relay team.
She was part of the relay team. And without, you know, she still mightn't have been running, but it was like going, if she didn't run, they weren't going to qualify. It was as simple as that. And my mum wouldn't have wanted that, like, you know, because she, I always say it, and I said it at the time, like, my mum loved me the best, you know. And she, I know she wouldn't have wanted it. And Mara went, like, she flew from, was it Korea?
Korea,
back to Cork, did all the removal, funeral, and went from the graveyard and flew back out to Korea and ran 2 days later. And they set an Irish record. And I was at home. Me and Cahill went off in a camper. It was horrible, like, you know. It was just a real horrible time, like. And I still, Mara went back, brilliant, she qualified. But it was numb. It was just like, tick the box, the job is done, like.
And your mother was always there supporting you through your athletics
career. She was. Like, my mum was a mum. She wasn't, like,
she wasn't a big athletics
fan. No,
like,
she wasn't an athletics fan. She was my fan, like, yeah. You know. And I can remember my last conversation with her was before I went out to Daegu. And I always remember it, even when I passed the Tesco now, did that spot, she said, better ring my mum. And I was like, mum, and she said, hey, where are you, boy? And I says, look, I says, I'm heading off to Korea there in the morning. I said, when we come back, I says, myself and Mara will bring you and Dad and Marion's mum and Dad down to Clarny for a weekend, because I wouldn't see them all year, even though they're only a couple of miles down the road because I'm training. And she said, oh, yeah. She goes, what are you going out there for? I says, in the World Championships. And she goes, oh, she goes, what? She said, I said, I'm doing the 20k on Tuesday and the 50k on Sunday or whatever. She goes, oh, you're not doing the 50k. She goes, jeez, don't do that at all. Like, that'll hurt, you know, that'll kill you. Like, it's too hard. But just as a mother, she just, you know, didn't want me to be hurt or suffer. Or she's seen some of the races. She goes, oh, it's terrible what you do to yourself. Like, and my mum was there for me no matter what. You know, and that it was sad. It's still very sad, like, you know.
Marion, how do you be a support for Rob and still kind of have the strength to go back out to your teammates in Korea? I mean, that must have been a real pull?
It was different. You've 5 or 6 different heads on you, because it's, you know, we weren't prepared for that. Like we went over to Dago to run, you know, and even when we got the news, we were like, you know, I think at one stage we were like, do we have to go home? You know, because you're not.
You don't know. Yeah.
You don't know.
Maybe I'll race and I go home. Then yeah, like, deal with it, you know.
Will I stay here or will I go? And you're just, you don't, you know, you're not prepared for it. Like, so I think coming home, it was just surreal again. Like, you know, we went from being in an athlete's village with Bolt and all the Americans and everything around us. And we were sitting in a funeral, you know, and then back then at a pub later on, we were like, this is... You know, this is weird. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, you know, it's very hard to kind of digest again. Like, but my coach was saying, look, if you're going to train, do these sessions, and if you come back, you come back. If you don't, you don't. Like,
it was hard. You know, you realize in the midst of all the disaster, like the reality of things. Like, if Mara didn't go back, there was no Olympics, so that would have been another disaster. You know, we wanted to have another baby. 4 years of our lives wasted, and then even like there was. I kind of just wanted to be on my own, yeah. And me and Kyle went off in a camper van, and it kind of hits a home to me. Like we went off, and I drove down to y'all, and I don't know, even just thinking about it and talking about it out loud, because I don't talk about it that much. That's where we went on holidays when we were younger, down to Redbourn and y'all, and I ended up going down there in the camper van, probably subconsciously, and I got a loan of the camper van off my brother-in-law. And me and Cahill spent a couple of nights down there, and I can remember being on the phone, and Cahill turned around and he said, you know, Dad, you're on the phone all the time. Cahill was only
5.
And I said, Cahill, look, blah, 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 and Nan's after dying, and, you know, I'm very upset, I don't know what to do. And he says, like, he turned around and he goes, Dad, come on now, like, that was a week ago.
I'm blessed.
You know, come on. And he was kind of right, because I still hadn't qualified for the Olympics, and, you know, you could suffer, and you know, fellas could go drinking, or you could go, you know, get depressed. But I just kind of decided I'll deal with it my own way, and I kind of trained once a day, and I raced in Germany 6 weeks later, and it was a strange time, but I think my training helped me get through it. So I had a structure in the morning where I trained, and then I only trained once a day. Then in the afternoon I'd kind of just dwell at home, then the next day I trained, and it helped me. And mm-hmm. You know, and it helped me get through it. Like, and then I went away. I remember I went to a race in Spain, and I finished 6th in a World Grand Prix final, and I set an Irish record, and then I qualified for the 50k, and I had no emotion attached to it. Like,
when did you start enjoying the races again? And if you didn't feel the emotion for
them
after that,
I think it kind of made me feel stronger. Like, I felt like I'm not religious or anything, maybe more spiritual, but I kind of felt like, oh, my mom is with me, and I hope there's something afterwards, because like, I never want to die, like, you know.
And were you thinking of her then at the
yeah,
World Championships?
Yeah, I always did, and I felt, you know, that she'd always be in my head, like, and that tough time would be in my head, and getting through that tough time. And I think that toughness stands to you when sometimes you think that you have a problem, and they're not problems at all.
Like, back to actually when you felt
what
bad,
a real
and it's
problem
like, this
is, you know,
this isn't a bad time at all. Like, this is good.
This is good, and you have to appreciate the good times then, and you have to enjoy them, and not look at good times as being, you know, stressful.
Marion, we've spoken a little bit about your own career, and you've given up your athletics career now to manage your husband, Rob. Do you feel that that was a very big sacrifice for you?
Had I done another 10 years in the sport, I don't think I would have ever got to his level.
Does it put a strain in your relationship then, that all of your focus is on the athletics and on the training?
It's not like he's living it up and I'm making all the sacrifice to help him. It's like, all right, I know his life is tougher than mine because he has to get out and actually do the sessions.
Is that something that kind of niggles at the back of your head, both of you, I suppose, that, you know, you are possibly competing against other people who are taking drugs, and Marion, you are possibly competing with other managers who are making their athletes take drugs?
The doping organisations and the anti-doping is the best in the world in Ireland. Like,
yeah,
I've been drug tested 18 times since January. You know, it's not as good in Russia because it's hard to get in there with visas, and China. Mm-hmm. But the way I look at it, and the way I've been all in my career, when I've improved my system just by observation of the professionals I've been around, there's still, and I'm always going to say this, there's 8 or 9 other things that we can do here. Like, we have no doping culture in Ireland. We've had 2 or 3 isolated cases. You know, it's not systematic. We don't have professional systems here. And I think the doping thing comes at the end of, you know, when there's big money involved in sport, when it's professional teams. But before the doping step, they've brilliant, brilliant systems in place. Mm. But if we can do that without the doping, we're going to have brilliant athletes because we have such a great sporting nation here. And I've proved that, like, and I'm very, very passionate about that because people always go, oh, he's doping. But have you done the 9 other things to reach your potential?
You still have to be on top of your game, sports-wise.
So it's not a matter that the boys are sitting back and they're injecting themselves and sitting back and watching Home and Away or EastEnders. they're training very hard, but if you're smart about it and you can train smart...
You can compete with them.
For me, I think we have so many good athletes here that you can't focus on it.
No, it's not even something that you'd go to the line thinking about anyway. Like, you're kind of, you know, well, you're genuinely...
I might get better about it when I finish or if I won no medals.
But you'd look at your own performance.
I always look at my performance because in Barcelona... There was a fella in front of me in Barcelona in the 20K who's just been done. He's been done for EPO. The fella who I had the run in with in London, who he only finished an inch ahead, he just got a lifetime ban for drugs.
So what happens with the medals then with those, Rob?
When you miss the window, like, it just said, for argument's sake, the fella in Barcelona was tested after Barcelona, so that period didn't come into it.
Okay. Do you not get really annoyed by that?
I do, but then what are you know? I still always look at whether, like, I'm very lucky, like, my performance made me world champion. But I think for anybody, whether they're a fun runner, whether somebody's trying to lose a stone, if you're trying to improve yourself, you're going to get great satisfaction out of it. Like, you know, if you're 20 stone and you start on a programme and I lose a stone, you get great joy out of it.
Marion, what's next for you? You've got a baby coming along the way. What are you thinking about?
Nurseries now is the last couple of weeks. We're getting the attic converted because we've no room. So it's home improvements for the next month anyway, and just trying to decorating around it. But another big challenge for us now is, like, in January when the baby does come, we'll have to juggle around things so that Rob can train as well. And it's, you know, I think with babies you can plan.
How's that going to impact the training? Sleepless nights, getting bottles?
Rob was after hooking himself up with a man cave. We got a kind of a Scandinavian log. Well, it's not a log cabin, but it's like a shed, glorified shed.
It's a log cabin, it's a wooden house.
He's after putting carpet in there and he's got a corner suite and a television. So
where is that?
It's in the back.
It's 6 metres by 5 metres. Yeah. It's
so
a
you're
castle.
Going to move out of the house.
So if things get really,
comes.
Really hard, I'm going to be left in the front room with the baby and Rob will be out in the man cave.
No, it's not. This is very harsh.
Rob, what are you planning towards then? What is next for you that you're going to have to go and live in the man cave back in the garden?
Being realistic, and Marion knows this, and I know everybody in the country saying, oh, wait until the baby comes out. But if I can't sleep, and in January, I'm training very, very hard. Like, I'm doing like 100 miles a week in January, and my January's getting ready for February. And if I don't do January, I can't do February, and then I kind of miss March. So they're all stepping stones. So if I miss one of them blocks, it's implications on the whole year. Mm-hmm. Marion understands I might get an altitude tent for the log cabin because I'd usually go away training in January for a couple of weeks or in December, but no, because I'm not going to, I have to make that training environment at home because it's still work. But I think we'll be less busy because I think people will understand that we have a baby and then all my extra time will be with Marion the baby. Like, so it's, I think we'll be less busy.
And tell me about the next generation. Cahill and Megan, do they want to follow in your footsteps and maybe the next arrival as well? Would you like to keep the interest in athletics in the family?
I think they have a healthy attitude towards sport anyway. They're in a lot of stuff. There's soccer, there's hurling, there's Megan does disco dancing and stuff. So
and Cahill wants to play rugby now after being at the rugby match. And,
so like,
and they were all running cross country last week. They're winning medals like all the time. Like they've monster medals and everything already, but We know because it's so tough, you can't force them.
Would that spur you on then, Rob, to go after that centre for walking in Cork?
Definitely, because I know from all the mistakes I've made, you know, when I was younger because of lack of direction, and even with when I started going out with Marion at the start, like Marion was brilliant underage and she never had kind of proper guidance as a senior. I came up more of a scrapper and I got good at 18, 19, so I was always very driven. And we'd nearly opposite upbringings that way. But Marion was kind of like, you know, she'd go down training. Her dad and brother played soccer with Ireland. Like, all Marion's brothers are like between 6'3 and 6'5, all big boys. So genetically, they're good for sport.
But it'd be good to have somewhere that focused on that.
Yeah, and I think if like even with Mara, if her talent was directed and other people mm-hmm. who are younger, if their talent is directed.
I think the programme will take the kind of the mystery out of it, because I think people think, oh, Rob, you know, Rob has this special setup that, and it's so simple, you know, it's so straightforward, it's so common, like it's really common sense, and it's like, no, there's no big mystery, there's no magic training sessions, mm-hmm. it's very, very hard work every single day.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you can live that for a month
basically,
and decide at
like,
the end of it,
that
sport isn't for me, or this life isn't for me, I'll go and I'll play
five
aside.
It's like a human horse box, like, you know?
We have to finish the programme, Marion. You chose this next song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Why did you want this song played?
The Wizard of Oz was my favourite film growing up, and it's something like by the time I was 4 I knew every single word to it, and I was just like, if when I think of my childhood, that's that song pops up. So I'll pick the acoustic version. I won't put people through the original.
Well, thank you, Rob and Marion, for being my guests this morning. Thank you sincerely to my producer, Eileen Hearn. Thank you to the programme researcher, Gerard Philpott, and Niall O'Sullivan, who is on sound at RTÉ Cork. Thank you very much for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure being in your company. Slán tá mBaile.
Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, and the dream that she did too. Oh why can't I?
Eveen and Company on RTÉ Radio 1. Podcast the show at rte.ie/radio player.